This week on Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast.
I would say the biggest challenge is the fear that if I don't have a 50-50 schedule, then something bad's going to happen. So I'm going to drive really hard for that 50-50 schedule until somebody convinces me that I'm not going to lose my kids.
Welcome to the Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast, where we discuss strategies and tips to improve your co-parenting situation, especially if it's high conflict. I'm Bianca Ballo, co-parent, mother, and entrepreneur, creator of Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger app and believer in turning challenging situations into something positive. This week, Karen Bonnell joins us again. I want to tell you a little bit about Karen, who has over 30 years of experience working with individuals, couples, and teams. She is a divorce and co-parent coach and family mediator. Karen dedicates her work to resolving conflicts thoughtfully, one person, one parenting pair, or one family at a time. She's an author, a former clinical nurse specialist, and now trains attorneys and mediators to help parents develop parenting plans and prepare for two-home family life. Thanks for being back with us, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me, and to the listeners for being interested in non-adversarial, compassionate, and collaborative ways to set up two-home family life. This is about your kids, so we're here to help.
So let's dive in. Tell me about your experience working with parents right from the beginning of a divorce when they're working on a parenting plan.
You bet. The first step, sometimes parents actually haven't even contacted an attorney yet, and they know about me because of the book, The Co-Parenting Handbook, and they'll come in and they'll want to say, how do we tell our kids? So that's one of the first questions that is often addressed. And if they've already told their children, I'm asking them, what did you tell your kids? Because sometimes we have to go back and do some repair work so that children have a solid platform, an understanding of what's happening to their family that supports their healthy social emotional progression through their parents' divorce. Then we usually move on to talking about how will we share the kids in different parenting time, right? You're always two 100% parents. Always. Don't forget that. But you're going to be on duty at different times. So we call that sequential parenting. And we're all familiar with that. You know, you remember the time where, you know, you're going to take care of this and I'm going to take care of that. Well, now we're just doing that in terms of building a schedule for two-home family life where children have a home with one parent and they have a home with another parent. Notice my language. I'm not talking about mom's house, dad's house. My children have a home with their dad and a home with their mom or their mom and their mom or whatever the case, right? And that way children don't feel homeless. If I'm going to mom's house and then I'm going to dad's house, where do I actually live? Oh, I have two homes. I have a home with mom and a home with dad. Right? So simple little changes, but things that are important. So we begin building that parenting time. And once parents are secure in how they're going to share their children, which is not just a one size fits all. I want a 50-50 parenting plan. Well, okay. How are we going to get there? I call it a runway. Sometimes we immediately move into a parenting time schedule. Sometimes we build it in tiers, in stages that really help children adjust. So these are all the conversations that we would be having together if you came into an office with a co-parenting coach and a mediator who does this work.
I find it so interesting about the semantics of how you phrase something, especially with a child, and how it can make a big difference in how you say it when you're dealing with parents who are probably having a lot of emotion. They're feeling so maybe sad or angry or just scared. Saying it correctly is probably very difficult. Do you know what I mean?
Scared.
So I can see how you might have to go back and do some repair work. I also love what you said about 50-50 and maybe building up to that. Are you saying that maybe it's not age appropriate to have 50-50 sometimes? Or when do you not have a 50-50 parenting plan?
Well, you know, 50-50 is really popular right now. I want to say that any presupposition is something I want to ask parents to be careful about. It may be completely appropriate, and it can be appropriate for a six-month-old, and it can be appropriate for a 16-year-old, but it might not be. And so it really depends on the nature of the relationships with both parents, the parenting time availability. You know, if I have a year-old baby And I have a parent who has parenting time, is available to do parenting time in one way, and another parent who literally just isn't because of their job. I don't want that one-year-old in endless childcare just to get a 50-50 schedule. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about how to make sure that both parents have a strong and engaged relationship. We're going to look at how to build that in such a way that that results in a time when the parenting time balance works well for that developing infant into toddler into preschooler. But we're not going to get wrapped around some symbolic axle that if I don't have 50% of the parenting time, I'm somehow less a parent. Mm-hmm. It just isn't the case. Now, we have to deal with all the fears that go with that. And we would certainly have to talk about the legal issues that happen when we don't have a 50-50 parenting plan. But my job is to help parents look at it through the lens of how do we best parent our children today, tomorrow, into next week, and 3 years from now. That's my job.
And so what are some of the most important things to consider when creating a parenting plan from that lens?
So one of them is that very, very young children stack rank parents. They just do. And we can argue about that all day long, and there's no point to it because we are all familiar with it. It's the scene where a child will run right past a parent who they are completely securely attached to, screaming the name of the other parent. You know, whether it's run right past dada to go, mama, mama, mama. In that moment, at that age, for that period of time, they're stack ranking mama in the face of a skinned knee or whatever the case may be. Okay, so what? Doesn't matter. Has nothing to do with the quality of someone's attachment or their secure base or their ability to parent. But it might inform how we start extending and increasing overnights, right? So we're going to have a conversation about that. What's going to help little Emma or Tyler or whoever adjust best to two home family life? And under what kind of time arc are we talking about? So what if we start out doing it this way for 3 months, and then we progress to this for 3 months? And then we progress to that when she starts pre-K, mm-hmm. right? And this is what we'll do starting in kindergarten and forever.
Okay, so stack rank, that is a term I've never heard of. Are you saying that they would just prefer one parent at that moment in time? Or
in that moment.
Okay.
Yeah, in that moment in time or in that particular developmental stage.
Okay.
Any parents who have raised kids together over time absolutely know the term mama's, you know, mama's girl, mama's boy, daddy's girl, daddy's boy, because children move in and out of that developmental stack ranking throughout their childhood. We just honor what's been, but we don't use that to drive everything going forward. We use it to drive the runway. Uh-huh. The concept of how to progress from what the children have been used to where we're going to go. It's not precipitous. It's not like a rupture. It's a runway. And then we take off.
Are you saying that if the parent or the child rather is stack ranking mom, that in the beginning they might have a little bit more time with a mom and then scaffold into more of a 50-50 later on when it's more age appropriate or developmentally appropriate?
So I wouldn't say age appropriate or developmentally appropriate in this context. I would just say as the child adjusts, because we don't know exactly when that stack ranking might shift or what that might look like. What we know is with experience, children build what I call emotional muscle. They build resilience. They build capacity. Okay. And so if a child has been with a stay-at-home parent, whether it's mom or dad, at the moment, that's what they know. The other parent, again, is divorcing, ending an intimate partnership, but not leaving their children. So we have to have a way to transition from what this kid lets know with a stay-at-home parent to now two parents that function in that parenting role across two households. That's what I'm talking about. How do we build that runway, and how do we do that in a way that our children thrive? One of the ways that we get children to become symptomatic, what do I mean by that? Dysregulating, lots of temper tantrums, sleep disruptions, lots of regressive behavior, fighting in preschool, all kinds of things that don't work for us as parents or for them as children is when we force things too quickly without an awareness of our child's ability to absorb that change. Okay. So we work together to build it so that there's resilience and capacity, what I call emotional muscle. Now, this doesn't need to take a long time, but you know, you're moving out on Saturday night, we'll start the schedule on Monday. Works for very few children. Very few.
And so what are some of the common challenges that come up when you are helping a couple come up with a parenting plan?
I would say the biggest challenge is the fear that if I don't have a 50-50 schedule, then something bad's going to happen. So I'm going to drive really hard for that 50-50 schedule until somebody convinces me that I'm not going to lose my kids. I think that is the single biggest fear that I see for my parents. So I spend a lot of time and effort on that, and I get the attorneys involved, of course, so that the legal stuff gets handled. Parents often won't move out and separate physically until they have a shared parenting time schedule. That's certainly smart, not required. But if there's any concerns about that, parents will often want that parenting time schedule secured first before somebody moves into a second home. Those are all things that are really common. Things that we have to work with. I would say the other thing that is really difficult for parents is if someone is already involved in a new romantic relationship. Perhaps it was an affair during the marriage. Perhaps when they decided to separate, it occurred after that. It doesn't really matter. But the idea that there's already another adult on the scene of this two-home family needs to be handled very, very skillfully, or it will put things on tilt between the co-parents, right? A lot of threat and fear around that.
Yeah, definitely. So you had mentioned that sometimes parents won't move out of the house until there is a parenting plan in place. And I was a little bit surprised to hear that you actually help parents before they have physically separated into two homes. Mm-hmm. To co-parent under the same roof.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a great place to practice and to help children begin to adjust. But let me make a clarifying statement. They won't move out till they have a parenting time schedule. That's just one slice of a completed parenting plan. So here in Washington State, they might have what's called a CR2A. It's like a baby contract that just has to do with the daily schedule. So we've agreed we're going to do this daily schedule for this long, and then we're going to progress it to that. And then we'll land in our final parenting time schedule of a 2255. Let's just use that as an example. Okay. They're going to want that in writing and contractually obligate one another to it before one of the parents moves into a second home. We haven't even talked about holidays or school breaks or, you know, the rest of the things that go into parenting plan, we haven't even addressed. Okay. So I want to be clear. It's not the whole parenting plan.
Got it. Got it.
Right. And sometimes we just really need to get people separated so that they emotionally can begin to do that heart relocation. Remember in our first episode, we talked about the heart relocation, which is my grieving process. Mm-hmm. My ability to let go of all of my hopes and dreams and what I, you know, what I never dreamed I was going to be facing, co-parenting or divorce, I'm now facing. I need time to grieve and get my grounding and my footing. Okay, that's a heart relocation. So now I lost track of your question. Let's go back to that. Oh, yeah. So parenting in one home. So sometimes parents take a period of time where they actually live their parenting time schedule even as they're in one home. So maybe one parent's moved into the guest bedroom, okay, for example. They've told their children the first sign that things are changing is if parents moved into the guest bedroom. The next sign that things are actually changing but haven't changed yet is that mama's going to be on duty and going to make all the decisions and take good care of you on Mondays. Dad is going to take good care of you and make all the decisions on Tuesday. So we build that rhythm in, right? And we just start practicing. That way, children begin to see that their parents are A, coordinated, B, can still work together even in the face of going through a separation and divorce. And parents get a chance to build skills that they now just need to strengthen. They both are good parents, but they're strengthening what it's like to do it completely on their own from soup to nuts. So not uncommon.
So what would they do in that situation where they're trying to be the parent on duty and the child runs to the other parent? I guess that would probably come up sometimes.
Well, it comes up a lot, doesn't it? And there's another thing. What about bedtimes? So let's talk about that. So we share a child together, and it's Emma. And Emma wants to know if she can go over to her best friend's house before dinner. And she runs to you to ask. And you're going to say, oh, Mama Karen is a decision-making parent today. So I love you, and you're going to go ask Mama Karen. So you're just going to turn little Emma around and slot her right back where she belongs, okay? And now it's bedtime, and I've gotten Emma ready for bed, and she's all tucked in, and she's going, I need to see Mama Bianca. I have to see Mama Bianca. And it's like, absolutely. You've done so well with your bedtime routine. Mama Bianca is going to be right in. So it's not a firewall. Right? It's not an iron curtain. It's not a rupture or weirdness. It's just that until we get through that bedtime routine, Bianca, you're standing down, you're standing back, right? You're over here on the side. And then once everything is handled, of course, you're coming in to give that kiss and cuddle and one last thing.
It sounds wonderful and beautiful, and it doesn't sound black and white, but very gray, you know, where it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. But it's a, like you said, a transition,
right?
Building the emotional muscle, right, of the child to kind of accept a different.
And the parents, right? Because you and I are now building emotional muscle too, where you're like, I just want to get in there and help because she's crying over having to have her hair washed in the bathtub. And I'm like, I've got this. So we have to build emotional muscle too.
Yeah, it's hard to stand down sometimes when you feel like you can provide care or love or whatever the child you feel like they need. It's really hard to step back. So it does sound like that practice would be super, super valuable.
It really does.
Let's talk a little bit about the importance of getting the parenting plan as close to, you know, very, very good as we can. Because I'm not, is there such thing as a perfect parenting plan, Karen? I don't know.
I'm working on that. I would love to perfect that. No, of course, because we can't anticipate everything the future is going to bring into our lives. What we can anticipate and what a very good parenting plan provides is what do we do when something unexpected happens that we didn't anticipate and we need help with. So that a parenting plan can do and should do. Every parenting plan should be written in such a way that if things fall apart, we have guidance. So I mentioned in our first episode about the parents who had to rewrite their entire parenting plan because at the time that they did it, they really believed that they could handle dividing up every holiday and school break as they occurred, right? Well, by mutual agreement was the language. That was fine until it wasn't. No one should sign a parenting plan that basically reads by mutual agreement without a default. Or some assembly required. You know, I say that some assembly required is like when you're, you know, doing Christmas or Hanukkah gifts and it's like some assembly required and you're like, oh my God, this is going to be terrible. I don't want a parenting plan that says some assembly required because inevitably there's a missing part, right? And we can't get the bicycle done. And now we're fighting about who lost the part and who was responsible for making sure the part was there and on and on and on. And I don't want people fighting. Remember, for children, the most toxic part of divorce is parents continuing to fight. The divorce itself, separating into two homes, a different family structure, a two-home family life, that's not what hurts kids. You know, it's an adjustment. There's grief involved. It's hard, but that's not what hurts kids. That builds skills and competencies and all kinds of things that children actually can benefit from if we do it well. But I will tell you, constant conflict between parents, that's what harms kids. That's what scares them. That's what makes childhood hard. A good parenting plan is going to help us when we're not getting along, right? If I call you and I say, hey, Bianca, will you swap the weekend of February 10th for the weekend of February 17th? And you say, no. Okay, there you have it. I am going to gracefully accept that that's not an option for you right now. And I'm not going to pummel you with a bunch of questions. And I'm not going to ask you to justify why you're saying no to me. I'm simply going to say, thank you for letting me know. And we're going to move on. Mm-hmm. And so a good parenting plan really stipulates how that works so that we're not continuing to fight in the way that we might have been fighting as a marital couple. All the rules for the road.
So what would that look like in the parenting plan? Would it say when the two parties don't agree, they would go back to Karen, or what would that look like?
Yeah, so we try to anticipate all the things. So the biggest thing that we're talking about here is just joint agreements. There are certain things that we have to have joint agreement about for them to change from what it says in the parenting plan. So if my parenting time is February 10th, that's my parenting time. It says so in the parenting plan. I don't have any rights to assume you'll change time with me. It is a right to know that the weekend of February 10th, the children will be at home with me. That's my right as a parent. Okay. It is an option for me to request a swap from you. So we need to know the difference between requests and what are rights. Now, if we can't agree about something that is important, maybe it's school choice, then we're going to have a clearly outlined dispute resolution process that we've both agreed to use when that occurs. So you're going to say to me, I'm initiating dispute resolution so that the option of the all-girls middle school tract is available to Emma. And I am obligated to join you in that process because I signed the parenting plan. So we're going to end up with a mediator, probably someone like me, to work through how we're going to make this decision. I'm not going to make the decision for you, but I am going to help you get more and more and more information. It's going to help the two of you make the decision.
Yeah. Back to your example about I requested you to swap days with me on parenting and let's say the other party says no. Can you talk a little bit about the need for flexibility or what you would suggest co-parents do when it comes to being flexible on the parenting plan?
So one person's definition of flexibility can be the other person's experience of randomness. So that's the first thing I teach co-parents that, it sounds functional and it sounds like the high road to say, I'm going to be flexible. When the person on the other side is like, yeah, your flexibility is like, complete chaos. So you have to be aware those words can sound pejorative or they can sound admirable. Now, the bottom line is in a parallel co-parenting plan, we're probably not going to have a ton of flexibility. I simultaneously teach parents, if you can say yes without resentment, always say yes. Now, you might not do that in kind. I might come to you a month later and say, hey, can you swap this night for that night with me? And you're like, no, that doesn't work for me. Now, I can use that as a tit for tat. I could, but I'm not going to because that's not what this is about. I am in charge of my choices. My choices are not in reaction to your choices. You be the parent that you're going to be. I'm going to be the parent I'm going to be. I look at myself in the mirror in the morning, not you. So I teach parents not to be reactive. Now, something else I teach them. If I borrow a cup of sugar, I'm going to bring you a piece of pie. That's just good neighborly patterns, right? We all grew up with that. So if you do a favor for me, I'm going to be on the lookout for bringing you that piece of pie, which is to say, do a favor for you. But again, I'm in charge of my behavior, not yours.
Right. I hear what you're saying. It's like I don't really owe you anything, but it's nice to return the favor, and that spirit can continue throughout the relationship, or it can come to a screeching halt.
Right. It's a virtuous cycle, and we get to choose. But I can continue the virtuous cycle on my own, regardless of what you do, because that's who I am. That's how I roll.
So, what if two parents have a parenting plan and it's not working well, or they're not even following the parenting plan? What if one party starts making these decisions kind of on their own? What would you recommend two parents do at that point?
Well, what I would recommend two parents do at that point is as quick as possible get some co-parenting guidance because those are actually violations of most parenting plans. And a parenting plan is a contract. It's a violation of boundaries. It's a violation of contractual agreements. And so I wouldn't let those things go for any length of time because it's an invitation for more violations. If we're not going to respect the contract that we have or decide to renegotiate the contract, then why have one? Unfortunately, the courts are horrible about sanctioning bad faith approaches to co-parenting until they're pretty egregious. And so it can be really frustrating. I want to acknowledge that. If the parenting plan itself is outdated, we wrote it when it was just the three of us, you, me, and Madeline, right? You're now recoupled, I'm recoupled, we've got stepkids, whatever, whatever. And the parenting plan, honestly, it just doesn't work under those circumstances. We should get in the room as co-parents, not the whole shoot and match, but just you and I get in the room and talk about how to modify or do an addendum to our parenting plan that now takes into consideration our step family lives for our children, not our step parents, our kids were the parents.
Right. I think that's a very good example, because when you are getting a divorce, you may not be with other people at that time. And then that's hard to anticipate or even build into the parenting plan when you are creating it.
I talk openly with my co-parents who are designing their parenting plan when they're making decisions that I know will work beautifully for the 3, 4, or 5 of them, the original family, particularly around holidays. I will tell them, this is going to work beautifully as long as your original families are just living across two homes. And this will not work in a step family situation. So do we need to say we're going to do it this way for the next 2 years? Then by agreement, we can do it beyond that. But otherwise, we're going to break into a pattern that is going to be more functional for step family life. A parenting plan that supports the reality that in 2 to 5 years, one or both of you are likely to be recoupled. That's just, again, the research tells us that.
Mm-hmm. So you do actually plan for it. You put it in there.
I do. There are actually provisions at the end of my parenting plan about when I'm going to tell you about introducing the children to a new romantic partner. And I'm going to have a provision in there that says that if somebody moves into my home who is functioning in a step-parent-like process, we're going to create a step-family plan, which simply means the three adults or four adults, whatever the case may be, are going to get in the room and talk about things like discipline, communication, the rules for the road now that there are more than the original parents participating in the lives of our children. Mm-hmm. And how that's going to roll.
I mean, it sounds so thorough to me. It wasn't my experience working with my attorney and my mediator, although we were able to come up with a really good parenting time agreement in the beginning and the parenting plan as a whole, but it was extremely insufficient, really, as it turned out, I feel, in the long run. So it wasn't extensive enough to cover a lot of issues that have come up. You know, why shouldn't someone just work with their attorney on a parenting plan and rather work with a co-parent coach or a specialist?
Yeah, again, attorneys know how to draft parenting plans, but they do it as a work product, okay? So they don't do it from a frame of reference of truly understanding family systems, which is important. And they don't do it from a place of growth and development, typically. It might roughly attend to growth and development, like a preschool plan versus a school age plan. But, you know, I'll have attorneys who will believe that you can force a 16-year-old on a certain kind of parenting time. Now, I don't know if there's any parents of 16-year-olds out there. I've raised two of them. They're now in their 30s. But I'm going to tell you, any healthy, individuating 16-year-old who you try to insist does a certain kind of parenting time that they're not on board with is going to blow up in everyone's face. That takes skillful parenting, not a law, not a contract, not the court saying. I had a freshman in high school who the judge had said to the father, no, to the mother, excuse me, said to the mother, if you don't make sure that that 15-year-old young man, who of course is bigger than her at this point, gets to a stand for his every other weekend parenting time, you're going to go to jail. This is a true story. It had gotten that bad. You're going to go to jail. That's the sanction. And you know what that 15-year-old boy did? Laughed. And he basically said, go ahead, try that.
Wow.
Let's see how that works for everyone. Because he just basically called the judge's bluff. And of course, the mom did not go to jail. So again, if we're going to do something family-centric, that's both parents, both homes, all the kids, considering their growth and development, then we're going to be working with an expert who knows that information. A 2-2-5-5 schedule almost never works for high school students. But if we start out with school-age kids and we put a 2-2-5-5 parenting schedule in there and we don't put any information in there about how we're going to change it or when we're going to change it, by the time we've got sophomores in high school, we have a problem.
Yeah, I do think it is so much about looking into the future and having it be very, very complete and thoughtful.
Right. Or at least have a very clear process for what do we do when. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do when this occurs. This is how we're going to resolve whatever might come up.
So what's the best advice that you can give co-parents regarding their parenting plan, whether they have a plan in place or they're working on developing one right now? Just one really good piece of advice moving forward in that process.
The most important piece of advice on a parenting plan is it should give you clear directions when you're not getting along. If you're going to be in conflict or there's going to be tension, I want you to follow your parenting plan so that that's unnecessary. Because that's what your kids need.
So do you work with clients virtually or are they all local or are they all over the country?
You know, the blessing and the curse of the pandemic is that I work almost exclusively now on Zoom. I'm going back to the office for people locally who would prefer to meet in person. And some do, which is wonderful. But now I work with people all over because I can work by Zoom.
How would someone find a good coach? Because it does sound like it's an invaluable resource for when you do have that conflict that maybe you can't resolve on your own. You need some help. How do you know you're working with a good coach?
You know, the first thing I would do, and I would just ask people to note this, the International Academy of Collaborative Professionals, this would be great to have in the notes, IACP, International Academy of Collaborative Professionals, they will allow you to search for mental health professionals in your area who do collaborative divorce coaching. Now, I get you're not asking for that if you're already post-decree. They will know who to refer you to in your area. If your attorneys don't know, that group will know because they meet regularly in groups and pods and clinic and train together. So that's how you're probably going to find your best folks.
Okay. That's an excellent resource. And also your YouTube videos that specifically walk you through the parenting plan. I mean, it's extensive. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So back in, I don't know, 20 something, Felicia Mosby-Soleil, who's an attorney, and I wrote a book called The Parenting Plan Workbook, which is all the information that goes into developing a child-centered parenting plan, many of the things that we've talked about here today. And then we also then created a video series. It's about 4 hours of videos broken into small increments. I think there's 14 of them that then walk you through each chapter. So you get the benefit of listening to she and I talk about the talking points from an attorney's point of view, a mental health professional's point of view that follow along that workbook. Okay, that's a whole lot of homework that you can do before you enter a mediator's office or an attorney's office and say, look, this is what I've learned. This is what I value. This is what I believe is important in our family. Can you help me with this? You've already done a lot of that thinking and you're not just kind of swept into a one size fits all adversarial process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's excellent. So it actually goes step by step through the workbook. The videos do.
They do.
Uh-huh.
They literally map with the book.
Yeah, that is excellent. I really appreciated how thorough the workbook series is. Everything from creating co-parenting goals mm-hmm. to what to consider as children age and get older and how the plan needs to change. And I also really liked the co-parenting alone video mm-hmm. because sometimes you don't have the cooperation of the other person. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, sometimes you don't. And what the research tells us is that one solid parent in a child's life, like anything else, one solid adult in a child's life can make all the difference in the world. And that's true even in our situation of separation and divorce. So we might be co-parenting alone. And that's possible, believe it or not, because what that means is that anytime I talk about Mama Bianca and our situation here, I'm going to talk about her as someone that I know my child, our child is fond of. I'm going to talk about her strengths. I'm never going to disparage her. I'm never going to criticize her new intimate partner that she's moved in, the fourth one in the last 3 months. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to become less of the parent I want to be for our child, regardless of whether she's participating or not. So a good co-parent understands that what our kids need is a parent that they can hold in their heart with respect and with love, even when that parent is compromised, even if that parent is addicted, even if that parent is incarcerated or absent. Okay, we can find ways to help our child make sense about a world that's not perfect. That's co-parenting alone. And then in the meantime, I'm just being the most skillful parent I can be.
Excellent. How can people find you if they would like to, you know, explore some of the options for having you help them with a parenting plan or co-parent coaching?
Yeah, easy to Google me. My website is Karen at Coach Mediate Consult. All one word, coachmediateconsult.com. If you Google Karen Coach Kirkland, you're going to probably find me right away, because that's where I live, Kirkland Practice in Kirkland, Washington.
All right. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up today's episode?
You know, I think there's just one other thing that I haven't said yet that I usually say, and that is, please know that parenting isn't a competitive sport. This is not about figuring out who the best parent is and they win. This is about figuring out how to raise a child under whatever the circumstances is to become healthy, whole, and resilient adults. That means typically that that child needs a strong and engaged relationship with both parents. And as much as you may want to punish a parent for what they've done to you as an intimate partner, I want you to always think about your child. That's what you want. So set that course right now. Set that course this minute for your children.
Thank you so much, Karen Bunnell, for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. And wishing the best to all the parents who are listening.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us this week on the Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast. I hope the time was well spent and you got a lot out of the episode. If so, please rate and review the podcast. I would really appreciate it. If you're interested in sending me a feedback message, asking a question, suggesting a podcast topic or guest, or downloading Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger as a tool for better communication with your co-parent, go to peacefulparentapp.com or see the links in the show notes. Have a great week, and as always, stay peaceful.